life was empty and dark. Without a light, without a heart, then Jesus came shining, put his lifeline around me. He lifted me out.
That's not just inspirational poetry. The most powerful inspiration comes from real-life intimate interaction with God. The life He has bought and offers us goes way past having an encounter with Him. Living in His creation, we can't help but bump into Him every time we turn around. That's not the intimacy described by eternal life as this, knowing God and the one He sent. Knowing in the biblical sense. And thank you, Father, for these that you've given me. I want them with me, and I want them to be one as we are one. You who live in the shelter of Elyon, who spend your nights in the shadow of Shaddai, who say to Adonai, my refuge, my fortress, my God in whom I trust, He will rescue you from the trap of the hunter and from the plague of calamities. He will cover you with His pinions, and under His wings you will find refuge. His truth is a shield and protection.
I've got Bob Soma in my house today. Thanks for coming, Bob.
Absolutely.
Bob has been a friend for quite a while, and more than a friend, he's been a real influence musically has been a big encouragement to our music. A lot of times being the musical director when we needed a band, and he also produced our live project, We've Come to Worship. We did that live and probably the hard way.
That was a fun project.
And I really appreciate the friendship with Bob, because he's one of our Tuesday morning guys that gather when we're in town and just kind of upload our lives. And it's a group that can open our lives to each other, because we're pretty much all road warriors and musicians. So we have a common context of our life. So yeah, we can pray for one another with some knowledge and some experience behind it. So I have some things on my mind to talk about, but first, that thing that Bob does so well. One of the best, because I don't know anybody that can adapt to just about any kind of environment, any kind of style, any challenge in the studio or live, and just not look for a minute like he's wearing out or overburdened by it or at a loss for ideas. And that's a pretty special thing. I'd like to get your perspective on how you got to that point. I know you've been into the guitar for a long time, obviously, but how did you get to a place where that was a reality, to just fit into any opportunity you've got?
It's a great question. First off, thanks for that amazing introduction, words that I don't know that I could live up to, but I appreciate God has somehow allowed you to see me in that light. What a blessing that is. I don't know that I planned to do that. When I picked up my first guitar, probably when I was 10, 11 years old, I can't remember how long ago that was, I didn't set out to learn a bunch of styles, but I know as I played guitar through high school and getting into college and moving on through there, wanting to make a living, it was a time when the studio musicians were kind of the pinnacle of musicianship. It was, there were studios everywhere. They were all firing all day long. Right. There were multiple sessions going on in every studio every day. Cartage companies were busy taking gear from one session to the next. So, yeah. And that was about the time that in my musical career that I was aspiring to be that. Mm-hmm. And I realized one of the benefits to learning multiple different styles and one of the qualifications of being a working musician at the time was you had to be able to land in any situation and be able to play that style or get that sound or sound like that guy. That's kind of what you needed to do. So I just listened to everything there was and I tried to adapt, you know, ran my way through some of the early horn funk bands like the Bay Area stuff. And like everybody else did at my age, listening to rock and roll at the time, listening to country rock, listening to R&B. I couldn't retrace the steps and find out exactly where I made the decision to be that way, but I guess musically the pursuit of being a jack of many trades, but maybe master of not one, but just trying to learn them all, it's kept me busy. It's never dull.
Yeah, well, that is a broad challenge to take. I mean, obviously you didn't feel like you couldn't do something ever. I mean, was there ever blockages where you couldn't even imagine thinking you could do this project?
Well, that's interesting. I'm sure I felt that way, but my personality and that I've seen lived out in the lives of my kids as well. I was one of those where I would spend 3 hours trying to figure out how to get out of doing something that would have taken me 5 minutes to do. So I would accept things as a personal challenge to try to overcome.
Yeah.
That can be bad, but in my situation musically, that was good. I would get into a situation where it'd be a style or a type of music that I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah.
And when somebody would call me and say, hey, I've got a session for you, a gig for you, and I need you to play, it's a blues gig, or it could be a country western gig, or it's a bluegrass gig, whatever it was, I would think, okay, instead of saying no, I'm going to say yes and woodshed for a few days and figure this out.
Do your homework and get something under your skin that might ooze out when you turn the mic on.
Exactly. And I think all of us are products of the other players in our life that have had input into our life, the musicians that I grew up with and have worked with my whole life. We've all kind of borrowed and stolen and kind of plagiarized from all of them a little bit and sort of put that all together. So I've obviously have this kind of vast influence of a lot of different styles of guys that have spoken into my life and career. So I've been blessed that way.
Do you remember at what point, it's almost like you've always been a Bible guy, a guy in love with God, or at least aware of him and his participation in everything is pretty obvious, even in what we've just talked about. He's given you these gifts, and you felt like you could just call on that gift and make it work because of, you know, there's a creator and he created you this way and he's opened this door for you and that kind of thing. When did God become an integral part of all of that?
My awareness of God's integral part, which is somewhat after the fact, of course, like all of us, was in my late high school days and I was about 17 years old. And when I had some friends that were also musicians that I was playing with and writing with, told me about the Lord, introduced me to Jesus, challenged me in a very interesting way, you know, to make a choice.
Yeah.
And from that moment on, I was trying to reconcile the two lifestyles because I was fully committed to music, but now fully committing to what God wanted me to do and just making the assumption that those two things were going to walk side by side and somehow coexist.
Right.
And I struggled with that for probably a good 10 years to figure out if that was two separate paths or that was one path or what actually that was. An interesting time. This is all, as I've started to get into this, this is about the time that the early Jesus movement, Calvary Chapel movement, was starting to kind of, kind of the genesis of all that.
Right.
So this was all kind of, but I wasn't involved in that at the time.
Right. Uh-huh.
So we were kind of pursuing music professionally as Christians in our own path when there was no Christian music industry at the time.
Yeah, I see.
So struggling with that, I'm still doing the gigs. And now fast forward 7, 8, 9, 10 years, I'm in my middle to late 20s, struggling with being a professional musician at the time because that's what I set out to do.
And there's probably some stigma as far as the church's perspective on what musicians are supposed to do too, huh?
Oh, very much so. And just like there is today. It's just,
it always has been.
So we're trying to reconcile all that. And I would get the honor to work on various LP projects at the time or TV shows, commercials. Mm-hmm. And they were for a product that as a believer now, I'm not necessarily going to endorse and want to promote. So there was this ongoing struggle just going, Lord, what do I do with this? Because this is my source of income.
Yeah.
There was no pathway in, like there is now.
Into a full-time music ministry position.
Yeah.
Thing, yeah.
So I really wrestled with that for a long time. And God was gracious and faithful, and as he is, of course. And just a whole series of events that I could not have possibly orchestrated, God got me through that whole situation at one point where I just realized, I remember distinctly the situation where I realized I was on tour, I was out with some Christian artists doing some events, and I remember trying to find at this time, and I won't mention any names for obvious reasons, but at this time trying to make the distinction of what's different than being out here on tour than just going out with some other secular artist, other than the fact that the venues aren't as big and the money wasn't as good. Mm-hmm. But basically, I'm still playing notes and guitars and, you know. Mm-hmm. So realizing that I had to figure that out, I just seek the Lord. I said, God, this can't be the way that I'm supposed to be doing it. Mm. So literally, Terry, I put my guitars down, put them in the closet, walked away completely for about 3 years and got into a sales position, started doing some other work thinking, all right, well, the two main things in my life cannot coexist. God is either number one or not. So I realized that music was always the conflict. Obviously, I'm not going to I'm not going to tell God he was wrong.
Right.
You know, so I put it down completely for a few years. And in those 3 years, again, God orchestrating situations, it slowly kind of introduced me back into it in a whole different way, seeing it completely differently.
Interesting.
Introduced me some guys that I had not previously known and met that are now are good friends. Part of our, you know, you're one of those guys. Some of the guys I met early on, I thought, wow, there's another way to do this.
So that's really interesting.
The picture in my mind was that God was saying you were trying to do it your way and to make it work your way. And let me just introduce you to the way that I want you to do it. And it took me that 3 years of kind of purging and cleansing in my own life. You always look back at times as being not as accurate maybe as they were, you know. Mm-hmm. Either they were miserable or they were real exciting times, but all that to say there were some funny things that had taken place, there were some tragic things that had taken place, but in that God reintroduced me to music and ministry and his desire for my life. It started me on the path where I am now, which I'm just so thankful he was gracious enough and patient enough to.
Well, it's an interesting thing that you mentioned tragic things in that same process of getting to that introduction into God's way of doing what you were gifted to do. How much do you think the tragic things had to do with you being able to see that?
Well, I think experiencing it, I'll call it a tragedy, by definition, the hardships in our life, experiencing those kind of
crushing,
take your breath away kind of things, like on your knees every morning going, God, how am I going to get through the day kind of times. We've all experienced those. But they tend to strip away everything in your life and just leave only the things that are essential and important. God does that for that reason, I think. And for me, the priority would be the Lord, my family, and my music. And all of the other stuff, nothing ever really mattered. And at that time, even music began to be, since it was sort of number three on the priority list, I really had to refocus on, okay, what are my priorities and how do I walk through this? And he just began to refocus me. And I'm so thankful he did, because I would have never come to that conclusion. I never would have aligned those kinds of priorities unless God would have forced me through those and sustained me through those and got me through the other side. So I think it had a lot to do with repositioning, turning me in a slight direction that I wasn't necessarily going ahead, so he would create something in my life to stir me that way.
Yeah, it sounds familiar because I think it's very common for those of us who have come to completely different conclusions about life or perspective about how we fit. It usually takes something traumatic or tragic for us to let go of our own perspective, because I don't think we necessarily think, well, this is my way and I'm going to do it my way. I think we're just so attached to it because we were kind of born with it.
We're stuck with it.
Used to practicing it. We think we're incorporating everything, but we're on this narrow view that we think is full because that's all we've ever had.
Yeah. And I think in those times, the blessing that we have is we've been given music as an outlet, as an expressive language in which to communicate those things. And I think of the hymns that, you know, It Is Well and What a Friend We Have in Jesus. I think of these hymns that were written out of a tragedy, out of a desperation for God to meet me in this tragedy, these lasting songs and melodies that come. And there's this beautiful art that we look at today that has grown out of just this heartfelt tragedy. And I think for us to be able to deal with that, God has given music. You probably do the same thing at your piano that I do with my guitar. When I'm struggling with something, I sit down and start playing.
It's a way to communicate it somehow.
It's opened up. Yeah, you can kind of express yourself musically and you can think through things and feel through things. So I think all of that kind of plays into how you output those things that God is inputting into you. Music becomes the language now that all of these elements that have taken the last decades of my life together now are kind of culminating when every time I sit down and pick up a guitar, I'm expressing all those things somehow.
Yeah, it's a special language, isn't it?
Yeah.
I believe that God actually designed music as a specific language, like a universal thing, because let's face it, the whole universe is a symphony. I mean, everything's right. playing a note because yeah. it's frequencies, it's emanations of light waves, and anytime there's a frequency, there's actually a note. Unfortunately, our ears aren't set up to hear it all.
Yeah.
Well, maybe fortunately at this point, yeah. because our ears would just pop if we heard everything that God hears. But I think he designed the whole universe to be this symphony, and I don't think we realize that we're out of tune to start with
mm-hmm.
until those jarring, somebody's turning the tuning peg.
Never thought
on
of it
us.
That way, but that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
And we're going, ouch.
Yeah.
And it's probably just life catching up with us being just a little out of tune.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realize human beings are really the only species in all creation that has the choice
right.
to tune up. When we do feel that,
yeah.
we feel it because there's some force behind all of that that wants us to tune up to the way things really are.
Yeah.
That's a homing device for
yeah.
us because he made us to be his and with him. And
I agree with you, Terry. I believe that we were wired that way to
yeah.
experience it in a universal way, to appreciate it, to enjoy it. They've done studies now, international studies, where they've gone to various different cultures, some way out in the middle of nowhere with just,
yeah.
and they would put headphones on people that have never heard music and just play a style of music and ask them to respond to how that makes them feel. And the amazing thing is they would all respond to something joyful or something frightening or something
yeah.
oppressive. They would all respond the same way. So
they relate
this,
to whatever it is immediately. Yeah.
yeah. I've come to the conclusion that other than maybe doing group calisthenics, music is the only thing that you can just start in a group of people and everybody can just do without a lot of instruction. I mean, the beauty
yeah.
of the creation of it is you basically can start a song and you could walk out of the room and the song would continue on because people have this innate sense of
That's
rhythm
right.
and some more
yeah.
than others, but this,
yeah.
you know, it just sort of happens. You don't have to have a lot of instruction.
Yeah.
So to corporately gather together, music is the perfect language as a group to experience and worship
yeah,
God.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate purpose of it because the physics or the mechanics of music
mm-hmm.
is actually something inexpressible suddenly taking form, and for it to reach its maturity
mm-hmm.
as music, it comes into a form where everybody in the room suddenly can be on sync with it and in time and
mm-hmm.
and in the pace of it and even catch the melody pretty quick. And so it seems obvious to me that, yes, music is a personal thing, but then it becomes a corporal thing. It shows that we're actually connected.
Right.
And our natural place is to be doing it together, singing together, and making this music. And I guess the only way to understand that in the way I mean it is to understand that the real music that's going on is actually for God's ears only. He's the only one that can actually hear the real music that's going on. And we have this compulsion or reflex to dance or to sing or to be drawn into it.
Mm-hmm.
But the real music is underneath all of that. And I've seen that so much in the, well, the you do it too. You wrestle with our interpretation of church music.
Yeah.
And really we're so pressed by it sometimes and the structure and the physics of what we're doing and the pressing kind of format or whatever it is, it just kind of easily squelches that natural universal law of resonance that just
mm-hmm.
causes things to tune up
yeah.
naturally. But man has always been able to say, no, I want to sing a dissonant
mm-hmm.
note. I don't want to sing that note.
Yeah.
But I'm going to sing something and it's going to be different. Of course, that's a whole different thing than not knowing you weren't tuned up and then yielding to the pain of being tuned. But that opens up a whole different thing. In everything you say and everything I get to know about you, Bob, there's this, and I take this word as a positive word. I know there's a negative side of it, but the pragmatic way
mm-hmm.
that you deal with life, and even from those early explanations of how things started, how the music became a quandary, especially when you were trying to figure out how it fit with this whole God thing and trying to make it fit, there was this pragmatism involved. In other words, you were asking the right right question. You were trying to get to the bottom of the quandary or the conflict or the uncomfortable status of what was going on. And that's one of the great values of my friendship with you, your involvement in my life, because there can be a quandary in the room and you immediately want to get to the bottom of it. I think that's a gift, not to you, but to me. I think it's a gift God gives through you. It's a cut through the cloud of confusion and all the emotional stuff that can surround any kind of turmoil and get to the bottom of it so that you can kind of either unplug it or plug it in correctly or do something that's going to correct the problem or at least get it on the right track. And that's probably what has equipped you to, even in those times where you put your guitars in the closet, you made a decision. Okay, this is not working, so this is how I'm going to handle this. I'm going to get down to it, unplug it, and go, because it's just too much baggage to keep carrying. So then the Lord's able to reintroduce that in its proper form. But that's just a picture, I think, of the model of how God really wants to work with all of us. If we would just dump the collective trash that we gather around every little question we have and just look up and go, okay, help me understand this and help me understand how to fix it.
We'll be right back after this.
Safe in the arms of Jesus. Safe in the refuge he gives us. Safe, safe no matter what day. Blessed in the arms of Jesus, blessed with the life he is in us, blessed, blessed, great is his faithfulness, blessed, oh, we're blessed in the arms of Jesus, looking on his face, we gather round the throne of our Redeemer, throwing down in the everlasting arms.
you've been involved in this church music thing of kind of mentoring worship teams. And I would think that that gift walks in the room with you because you immediately can see where everything's just kind of flapping in the wind. Mm-hmm. And you want to close that window so that everybody can settle down and look at what the real issues are. Tell me a little bit about personally going in to churches that are willing to deal with things and want things to really make sense. Of course, that's a wonderful thing to see right there, just
sure, yeah.
on its own. But to be able to take on that kind of challenge, you've got to have the determination to get to the bottom of things, no matter what they may look like. So I'm wondering, how do you go at something like that? I mean, say you haven't even been in a church that has asked you to come in, and you've been several times to this one that I'm thinking of, mm-hmm. but there was a first time.
Yeah.
And how did you get to the bottom step so yeah. that you could help everybody take the first steps?
It's a great question, Terry. First, I preface this by saying the process for me in the early days with the workshops that were sponsored at the time by Maranatha Music, the concept was we're going to get a team of people like myself, and I think there were probably 8 or 9 of us that represented the various musicians and singers and you know, and other logistical mm-hmm. people, create an opportunity where a lot of people from around the country, a lot of the world can come to us for a couple of days, and we're going to mm-hmm. kind of input into you a way that you can make this better, which is a great and valid. I know that still goes on. There's a lot of those that are doing a great work in the church. And what I realized at the time is that everybody that walks in, I had to make the assumption that I know what's best for you, regardless of where you come from and what your situation, how big your church, what your congregation, your city is like. I had to walk in with the confidence that I know something that's of value to you. And there's an element that's true because there are some things that cross over denominational boundaries
yeah.
and, you know, styles.
Fundamental thing, yeah.
And I absolutely love doing those. I still do. There's nothing mm-hmm. more fun than to get in a room with a couple of hundred other guys that, you know, have such a heart for the player that commits his time every weekend to church and go in and
yeah.
pick up a pair of drumsticks or strap on a guitar or get to a keyboard, whatever his instrument or voice is, and just go, all right, Lord, I want to serve you. How do I do this? And I have such a heart for what they're doing because I was one of those guys.
Yeah.
Well, I think what happened to me over the years is I would start to meet with guys and see different players and realizing that the struggles that they were going through were sort of unique to their church, unique uh-huh. to their situation, yeah. their congregation. Many of the questions that would get asked in the context of a general session at these large events would be really specific.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we would try to minimize those because if you have 200 people in the room, you couldn't address 200.
General.
Yeah.
yeah.
But I realized that that was part of the issue. There was such an individual and a unique situation. I wanted to be able to speak into that. So
yeah.
started a couple of years ago, the church you're talking about, the pastor said, hey, my team's trying to get from here to here. We're trying to take the next step and we don't know how to do this. Can you come up and help us? And I said, sure, I'm good at this. So I walked up with my little toolbox and my bag of tricks and all of what I perceived to be my knowledge of how to do this better and walked in the room and had 12, 13, 14, 15 people on a worship team staring at me across the table, like looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I realized, yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't know what I'm talking about. But what it caused me to realize is that I need to take a step back, humble myself greatly in this to realize that even though I've been doing this for years, I have a much experience in what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
but my ability to address your particular situation or their particular need had nothing to do with that yet until I could humbly sit before them with my ears open and my mouth shut and go, where are you? Who are you? And what has God given you in a vision for this? And where do you want to go? And what's the dream God has placed in you? And when I can understand that, then I think the years of experience that God has allowed me to have can now facilitate them going from where they are to where they really feel like God is pushing them. And that's a whole different way of thinking than, let me give you 10 steps to improve your worship experience at church. Going through that experience really kind of lit a fire in me to do that. Couple of churches that I work with ongoing now, I absolutely love it because I can look back after a year or so and realize the first time I met them, how far that they've come in a year. And so I see them get excited about moving forward. So it was humbling for me because, you know, I'm the guy that's been around the block. I do this professionally. I know what I'm talking about. I want to walk in the room and go, okay, let me sit down and tell you how to do this. And God just kind of slapped me upside the head. He says, no, sit down, shut up and listen. You know, I got something I want to teach you this time. And he did. Yeah. And that's been a great, valuable thing for me. And it's incredibly fulfilling to feel like God is using me to bring this group of people to another place that God intends for them to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of out of that picture.
There's this very clear contrast between those two approaches. And I see the place for both, but I'm not sure you can compare their fruitfulness. Because what has lit the fire in you for this particular kind of mentoring and in its most fundamental definition, ministry with those churches is so completely based in relationship. Like there's a personal connection that I'm starting to believe is absolutely necessary for the life-giving fluid that they really need to actually get to them. And I can't think of anybody better at that than Jesus. I mean, he actually made everybody that he's ministering to, and he never pushes that conduit open. He presents the challenge. And like you said, this pastor says, we need help. And obviously, there's a process that brings you to the point where you humble yourself and actually ask somebody to help you do something that most guys in that position would never do because they're the ones that are supposed to know how to do it.
Yeah, and that brings up a unique challenge. Terry, I was thinking about this recently where technology has brought us to a point where we don't live in our community anymore. We look at the entire world as being our community because we have the internet and we have access to everything. So we don't celebrate our community. We long for what the other community halfway around the world has. And we're not satisfied with what God has given us because we see so much more and we experience so much more that's out there. And I think what that's done is that's kind of filtered its way into the church where we're no longer satisfied with what we have been given by God because we watch church on TV or on the internet and what's happening somewhere across the country or across the world. And we want that. So we want to replicate that. And I think part of the problem is that struggle in the church to try to celebrate, you know, what God is doing all around the world, try to celebrate that kind of all-encompassing and bring all those elements as opposed to celebrating a global God in our community. He's doing great things everywhere, including right here in our church and our community. And one of my desires and my passion is to try to at least retrain the way that the church leaders and worship leaders and song leaders and people involved in all the worship arts think about what they do.
Yeah,
I love to see thousands and thousands of young kids just on their face or hands in the air, just singing passionately to the Lord in a live worship service someplace. And that's really wonderful to see and wonderful to see a work of God in that kind of sold out heart for the Lord, but realizing that is not the makeup of the church that I go to every Sunday. And so to try to recreate that sort of experience in our little church in our little corner of the planet, it's never going to work.
Yeah.
I'm asking my church musicians and singers to do something that is not natural to them or maybe that they're not competent of or they don't even feel comfortable doing.
Yeah.
I'm telling my, you know, my rock and roll guy to play jazz all of a sudden, so to speak. I'm trying to make you do something that is not naturally what you do.
Yeah.
So I think the challenge for me was to try to get the church to see itself uniquely as something that it should be celebrating because God is doing a work here and the work he's doing is so wonderful.
And it's unique.
It's very unique.
Yeah.
And I love to talk to the guys and I'd say, look, when you're putting your worship service together, don't just use the top CCLI 50 songs or the latest songs out of different ministries from around the world as your palette. I said, just look around your congregation and your city where you live. What's going on this last week? You know, what are you struggling with in your church? What is the economy doing? What's happening socially? What's happening economically? And it can be very personal things, but they're right there. They're small in your community. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody's walking into church thinking
about.
And there's
the song.
It is, exactly. That's it. And to actually ignore those or overwrite them because you want to do this really great song that's fun to do that was part of an event that happened somewhere across the world. Now, not to say we can't have that element.
No, it's got its place.
Yeah, but don't ignore that.
But and the personal thing is really where the faucet opens up and the Lord can give new life. And why else would we gather? I mean, talk about pragmatism. I've come to the conclusion that why would we actually take the trouble gathering in a room to sit just to say that we went and not see the model that God has given us in his book about we gather because each one of us is a unique expression of one person, the infinitely expressive God that has saved us so that we can enjoy being part of him. And for us together, for some other reason than to celebrate that, the actual uniqueness that we have, and to move toward him together from our unique places, but obviously see that that's all synchronized, it's all coordinated as a body. We've made sacred the word body without remembering that it's actually talking about a very coordinated, unique being that's got all these parts to it. Yeah. That move together. Otherwise, they take it to the hospital to get it fixed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that all of that, even having physical bodies in this physical world, is actually a little glimpse into this beautiful thing that God's going to have throughout eternity, which is together the expressive parts of all that he's made, the ones that can sing, the ones that can choose, the one that can dance and not just be an illustration of it, like the trees clapping their hands.
And right.
That's all an expression of this divine dance that God has invited us to be involved in.
Someone once said, it's beautiful that when the Holy Spirit enters you, he does not come in and violate your personality and turn you into something else.
Right.
He uses all the giftedness that God has given you already, the uniqueness of yourself to be...
He made you like you are.
To be a creature that's going to worship God fully and completely as well as anybody else.
He just completes you,
One of the things that certainly the Bible warns us about, as a hand, I'm kind of going, you know, I want to be an ear. I want to be an eye because... We long for this other kind of gifting. And
right.
If we fail to see the function of our giftedness that God has given us graciously to use as part of the body that comes together to worship him, and that's where we get caught up sometimes.
Yeah.
Because if you look at that from a corporate standpoint, as our church is not satisfied with what we have, because we've now experienced what they have down the road or in the city where they have a 10,000-seat auditorium and you know lights and fog machines and a full band and orchestra. And so that we're not satisfied in that. We're actually that we create this dissatisfaction in ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the problem starts.
No person of the three-in-one God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, is trying to realize themselves. They're all about the other ones. And the only way we can enjoy our uniqueness is to understand it's completely for the other people in the room. It's completely for the other people in my house. I'm the gift that God has given, and whatever I'm able to do is to be done with joy, not that I can take credit for something or see myself in the mirror as the one who's most accomplished in the family, but to be totally lost in all of that. And it's really such an irony to us that the only way to be uniquely yourself is to not see yourself at all and to be completely immersed in being the completion of the other people that are around you. And that's a conundrum in our mind because we've got ourselves on our mind all the time.
Right.
And we just don't understand why other people don't have us on their mind too.
I was reading in Hebrews 10 today where it's talking about not to forsake the gathering, which is, when you think about it, Doug, he knows our tendencies. He has to tell us to not do something because he knows on our own we would probably do it.
Yeah.
But the reason for that gathering, if you read through that whole entire section of Hebrews, is so that we can sow into each other, that we can be there for each other, as opposed to let's gather together and create something that I'm going to enjoy.
Yeah.
Let's gather together as an opportunity for me to come alongside you and fill you with what God wants you to have
today. I don't think we've gotten a whole lot of training on how that's supposed to work. I mean, it doesn't work in a Roman theater. It doesn't work in a Greek lecture hall. Those aren't the environments where that goes on.
Yeah.
But it's more like this. I mean, you're in your living room together, and like our meetings with the Tuesday morning guys, it's just guys gathering. But the word gathering really has more meaning because it wouldn't work for us to watch that on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're a part of it. We're an integral part of each other's lives. We move together through these challenges that we meet. Not too long ago, I was thinking about that when people make the decision, they hear the gospel, they come forward or whatever they do in the format that's going on. Maybe it's a personal conversation with somebody at a coffee shop. And they decide, yes, this is what I want. Well, whoever goes with them on making that step, personally, I can't imagine them not being integral to each other's lives from that point throughout eternity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it connects them forever because they've made that kind of entry into full-on life together. And it means from now on that they're involved in that growing and helping one another, stepping when we can't take the step.
Yeah.
and thinking when we can't think, and just being quiet when everything else is just screaming around us. And I think that's what the relationship is that God has saved us for. Saved us from this isolation from relationship so that we can actually be integrated into each other and become aware of how he works through us and in us as we move together. It is really a dance.
It is, and it's a huge challenge. The gathering of a congregation have so many different preferences and so many different personalities, and some people are type A, type B, you know, all these different kinds of personalities coming together. And like you said, okay, on your market set, let's dance together. And the challenge of trying to come up with some sort of a, I don't want to say liturgy, but some sort of a format to where we can, as a group, function in one voice and one thought to honor God and worship God and hear from God. Just the challenge of that every week certainly is just overwhelming when you think about it, because we're so wrapped up in our own solutions to the problem as opposed to going, all right, God, what would you have us do?
Well, I think David nailed it when he coined the phrase, a new song, singing a new song.
Yeah.
We've got what we know, the hymns and songs and spiritual songs, and then there's the new song. Being a worship leader, I think, has a lot to do with hearing what's going on. You were pointing at what's going on in these people's lives. How can that be disconnected from how you format a service? Right. It's got to be in sync with that, or they're not going to get any value from this. They're going to go away tireder than they came in. And you don't want that. You want them refreshed. You want them regenerated. The only way that can happen is that the living water somehow finds an open space to pour into. And if you're thinking on those terms, then you're thinking in sync with the one who wants to touch their lives. And coming up with that one thing that we can do together is called a song.
Yeah.
Because no matter whether you sing it musically or you sing it verbally or just sing it with complete awe and silence before the presence of the Lord that gathers us up, he's the gatherer.
Yeah.
And we just gather to him.
I think it's interesting that one of the things that gives me such a view of God's faithfulness in my life is to track back in the times that he saved me and guided me and sustained me through those things. There's that historical view of who God has been. Mm-hmm. One of the things that some of the hymns and some of the early choruses is that they show God and they sing to God and they acknowledge him as being the sustainer through all time.
Yes.
It's not just about right now who I am right now.
That's right.
It's about seeing the faithfulness of God in all time. In that new song, that is a representation of a God who remains faithful since the beginning of time.
Continuity of all that's happened. And
and it's kind of like it's the thread. It's that lifeline that will continue on through this moment, onto the next moment, and onto the next generation. It's that one constant that God remains the same.
Yeah.
If we have that in common and the style that we choose to celebrate that, it's not all about me and all about today.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a God who remains faithful through all of eternity up until this point and from here on. And I think that we can all supersede all of the other stylistic things, but there's not enough of the voice that says, hey, we've been through this a long time, and let me tell you about some real practical stories about God's faithfulness in our life.
Well, one of these days, I believe, all of those voices will be a chorus together, all the multiplicity of what God has created all at the same time. We need all of that. We need the energy for what's happening right now and how I feel and how I receive what God is pouring out right now, but in context with everything else. And I just think that our brains haven't been used to that capacity. We don't incorporate things. We like to box things into little segments. That's what makes dogma and walls between doctrinal bents down through history. We want to constrain what God has shown us so that we can actually process it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got this bunch over here that believes this segment, and they just can't handle the rest of the pie. They don't want to be playing well with the other children. You know, they want to play with their people that think the way they do, and that's a natural thing. It's not a spiritual thing. A natural fence that goes up to protect against any kind of risk of losing your bearing. Well, you don't really have your bearing because you're not holding that lifeline of continuity
right.
as you're dancing about what's happening right now.
Right.
And so it all has to have this continuity. Otherwise, we're all in our little camps playing our own music and dancing our own dance and singing our own songs. And it needs to be a family. I just don't think there's a whole lot of leadership that thinks that way. It seems to me that especially now in the market-oriented world that we live in, mm-hmm. which really is playing against us playing with the other children because it makes everybody have to cross a boundary to get to the others, to minister to them.
Well,
we have to cross a gulf. We have to go across a bridge to actually go deal with the poor or with the divorcee or with whatever segment. I mean, we've segmented our lives and our experiences into these little syndromes that builds a little room for itself. You have to work real hard to break into those rather than tap them on the shoulder and put your arm around them and pray for them and because you're part of one another.
Right.
And you're not just one kind of person. You're for the people that God connects you to. And they're different from you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like we want to think in those terms because it's hard work. We think of it as hard work.
Yeah.
But it's so much more free and it's a whole lot less work.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not always working to keep yourself in your own mind what you think you are, maybe.
I think church leaders, even some good friends of ours, are, I don't want to say fearful, but they're reluctant in this age of modern church to ask too much of their congregation because we're so used to being able to get it our way at our time, the way we want it, that for somebody to tell me that, no, you're going to come here, but you're going to have it our way instead of your way, they're afraid of presenting that that's too much of a hurdle to jump over to get into the building or to be part of this church. There's clearly a participation that we have in the sanctification of our lives. God has called us to sacrifice, to works, to things that we do to participate in this. I was telling someone this the other day. I think every time I've been asked to do something as a requirement of me to kind of step up and make something happen, I get the other side of that task and I'm feeling pretty good. I'm thinking, wow, I've done something.
Uh-huh.
I started it and I finished it and I feel some ownership and some investment in this.
Yeah.
It's like teaching your kids how to save up for something as opposed to giving them the money to buy it.
Yeah.
When they do that, they feel like they have an investment in this now, so therefore they have...
And you see the light go on in their eyes and you're going, wow, this is great.
And I think in the macro of this in our world, in worship teams, I think that happens a lot. I think there's a reluctance to ask people to give too much time. And and everybody has a busy life and a busy schedule. Understanding that and being respectful of that. But I think if we're willing to step up a little bit more as leaders and go, you know what? The entrance into this is free, but the sustaining contribution is this level of commitment.
Yeah.
I need you to be able to commit to A, B, or C, and that's what defines you as a member of this team.
Yeah.
And I think as a church, we can probably do that. Congregations and worship teams and people like us that just come to church, we're really capable of doing a whole lot more than is asked of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always been likened to a football game where you got, 22 guys on the field doing all the work and 30,000 people in the stands watching it be done.
Yeah.
And that's what happens because nobody's asking those 30,000 people to do anything.
Right.
Because we know we can always count on the few. Even in that situation where we've made it so easy for people to kind of enjoy themselves and find their comfort zone on Sunday morning, what that ends up doing is we have something that kind of for men and something for 20-something and something for the older folks, and here's a traditional thing and here's a contemporary thing, and we're celebrating our differences as opposed to celebrating the things that we have in common.
Right.
They've lost that sense of ownership in it.
Yeah.
And in that loss of ownership comes with a sense of obligation to sustain it and make sure that everybody's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The willingness to step up and require people
to
distinguish yourself as a part of what we're doing here, this is what will distinguish you as a part of this.
Yeah.
This will identify you as a part of this ministry.
Here's the entry level.
Here's what you
do. Here's what that means.
And here's what we do. And great. If you're here, great. We'd love to have you doing this. And if you're not comfortable with this, there's probably other places to serve or be a part of. And I'm talking about that in terms of any ministry, any macro ministry within a church, because we're so afraid of saying something that's going to cause people to leave or to be upset with us that we don't like to take that stand. And I tend to think that quite the opposite is going to take big place. When you have people require them to make that investment, like I said, they're going to sense that ownership and therefore that obligation and that, yep, you know, we're making sure that this works.
Well, it's clear to me that if you have that, even if it does dwindle your numbers down,
right,
you've got an environment of growth there where everybody's going to be engaged in the right thing. I mean,
right,
you don't have to guess what people are there for.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, thank you so much for the time that you spent to be with me on this program. We're friends forever, so you're stuck with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me over to your house, Terry. It's been great. Appreciate your friendship. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. Was from Bob Soma's CD, A Christmas Journey. If you'd like to find out more about Bob and his music, you can go to bobsoma.com. Also, all the songs that I sing on Terry Clark and Friends can be found at catalystpeople.com. CatalystPeople, just like in chemistry, people.com. Come see us soon.